I think the main point is that all of these restrictions, regulations, they're all ultimately the threat of violence. And if you're yeah. using the threat of violence, you're not talking about capitalism.
Welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast, where we discuss the journey to real liberty through self-sufficiency, counter-economics, non-aggression, and the agora.
The Outpost represents the border between societal norm and the pioneer spirit. Every episode contains practical, philosophical, and technical information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve. Welcome, everyone, to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. I am Regina, and I'm here with Cyrus.
Hello.
And today, we are talking about how the government destroys capitalism.
Yeah. Another fun topic about government.
It's a pretty bold statement there.
I think it can be demonstrated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's definitely case studies to back up this claim.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, it's counterintuitive because we've been taught that we're very pro-capitalism in this country. But then the reality is that we're just getting red-taped and bureaucrated and taxed to death.
Yeah, and the business people, a majority, like the idea of capitalism. The entrepreneur likes capitalism. But they don't live in a capitalist structure, and so they have to find ways to work within the, economic structure that we have, which is not capitalism.
So what would you consider our economic structure?
I think the best term I've heard for it is crony capitalism.
Mm.
The idea being that you have to work within the government's regulations and restrictions, and if you can gain influence within that system, it helps your business, which is where the cronyism comes in. Because you have...
Yep.
And if you're a really large company, it's advantageous. So companies like Facebook, Zuckerberg is for regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Bezos, he's been pushing for regulation of drones. And they push for those regulations because they have the means and the money to influence the regulation to their favor and help. I guess the best way to say it is in a free market, everybody can compete fairly.
Yeah.
But in a market where government creates regulation and people with money and influence help create the regulation, it's an unfair advantage. And the small guy who doesn't have the money or the influence has no say in the regulation, and so he gets regulated out of business. And that's why large yeah. companies like regulation, because they can regulate their competition out of business.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's kowtow capitalism.
Yeah.
Whoever you're kowtowing to is going to do better. And that usually takes dollars, lots and lots of dollars to kowtow. And
well, yeah, it's bribery.
I feel like it is bribery. And I feel like mm-hmm. corporations really control America and our laws. It's whoever has the most money to throw at lobbyists, to throw out swaying government regulations. That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, it reminds me of Microsoft back in the, I think it was the late 90s. So Microsoft, obviously, we all know, became a huge company. And mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of Microsoft, not because of their business practices, but because I don't like their products, really. But the...
I agree.
You know, they became huge because their competitors were selling their products and Microsoft was giving their products away. And so they dominated the market. And then, you know, they didn't, government wasn't regulating them in any kind of way. And then government noticed, hey, we have this huge company over here. We've got to regulate them. You know, this is a huge new industry, mm-hmm. and we've got to do something about it. People are complaining about monopoly, which they didn't have. But yeah. So the government sued Microsoft. Or actually, if I'm remembering this right, and I could be wrong, they went to Microsoft and said, hey, we've got to create regulations for all of this. And Microsoft basically said, you know what, we're not really interested. You do your thing, we'll do our thing. And so the government sued them, and there was this big, long battle, and it cost Microsoft tons of money. They ended up losing the lawsuit. And then a number of years later, 4 or 5 years later, Microsoft now had this huge, beautiful building down in D.C. so that they could be a part of the regulation process because they learned their lesson. We've got to play this game or it costs us money.
Play to win.
Right.
And now they're this huge conglomeration with really no competitor other than Apple. You know, when you think about operating systems and software.
Right, yeah.
And whatnot. Yeah. And they suck. Like, their product kind of sucks. I enjoy Windows to a certain extent.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Windows is okay.
The operating system. Yeah.
Most people are like me. They don't know any other operating system, so I don't have anything to gauge it by. But I know the other products that they offer and sometimes try and force me to take, I don't like them. You know,
The forcing of the updates and the forcing of all kinds of shit that they make.
Yeah, my computer is forever trying to get me to use Bing, and I can't stand Bing.
Ugh.
You know?
Or Microsoft Edge. So you have to use Microsoft Edge and Bing.
Yeah.
And you have to go into your operating system files or settings to disable all of those things and then...
And then it still finds a way to creep in. Yeah, it'll creep in every now and then.
It still creeps in.
But, I mean, that's neither here nor there.
On and on about Microsoft.
Yeah. The point is...
But it's true. We don't have anything else to compare it to because you're either on an Apple system, which is a completely different hardware, and a completely different price range as well. And you have Linux, which is really more of a higher level operating system.
Yeah, you've got to know a lot more what you're doing.
Would have a hard time grappling with.
Right.
That's it. Really. Windows, Linux, and Apple.
Right.
But if you did want to opt out of Apple and Microsoft BS, it would be Linux because that's open source. FYI.
Right. Yeah, and
if that's something you wanted to do.
Well, I've considered a number of times trying to make the jump to Linux. I just don't have the time. I don't have the time for that learning curve right now. But someday I probably will.
Yeah, I would like to, especially if you're getting into cryptocurrency and mining operations and remote server kind of stuff. Linux is where it's at.
Yeah, so...
But it is. It's technical. It's a whole other level. It's not going to be your user-friendly plug-and-play Windows.
Yeah.
That's made for the general public, so... Another big monopoly is Google.
Yeah. Well, and I think, well, they're not a monopoly, but I think they just became as big as they are because they were...
pretty high up the chain.
Yeah, but being high up the chain doesn't make you a monopoly.
That's true. They're not quite a monopoly yet.
Right, because you have other choices other than Google. They just suck.
Yeah.
And that's why Google does as well as they do, because they're the best at what they do right now.
Yeah.
And... I'm sure there are regulations in place now to stifle competition against Google, which helps them, which they probably helped create the regulation. That's a guess. I don't know anything about regulating search engines, but, you know, there are examples.
Well, they started off as like a data collection agency for the government, I believe. I'm not sure the history of Google, but there are some serious ties between collecting people's data and giving it or reporting it to the government or contracting with the government. And that's how it all started.
Well, it certainly wouldn't surprise me at all, but...
Yeah.
And there are examples of reverse regulation that was shown to help. Like, for example, AT&T was at one time a true monopoly. Well, mm-hmm. minus one caveat, AT&T used the government to become a monopoly. So,
yeah.
When was it?
That was before cell phones, though.
It was before cell phones.
This was before cell phones.
Right, and then...
This was when you actually had to pay your bill with a check and an envelope and a paper bill. Yeah, I remember those days. Yeah. And it was AT&T. I remember paying AT&T for my phone service.
And then before, you know, early on, there were two. There was Southwestern Bell, and then AT&T ended up buying Southwestern Bell. But... Then the cell phone industry came along, and they deregulated the phone industry, which brought up all these other cell phone choices that we have now, all these other carriers that we now have that have to compete with each other that we can all choose from. That happened because of deregulating that industry. Government got out of the way to a certain extent and allowed competition. Otherwise, we would all be stuck with AT&T and we'd be paying whatever they told us we had to pay. And we would have shitty service because it wouldn't matter because no one had a choice. So
the service was horrible. I remember being on the phone waiting to talk to an AT&T representative for 2.5 hours once.
Oh, man.
It was awful. And it was just to get my service turned on. I think I was at a payphone. I don't remember the whole thing. It was a nightmare for me.
Payphone, what's that?
Exactly.
There are people in our audience that aren't sure what you're talking about.
Cell phones didn't really come around. I didn't have my first cell phone till I was really like 20. And it was a flip phone and it didn't take pictures. And
right. You
texted by pressing the numbers keys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I at least got to grow up in my childhood without internet and devices, which was nice. You don't see that much, but...
Right.
So I have an interesting case study of a local example of how government destroys capitalism. Something on a much smaller scale that we can all relate to.
Okay.
But before I go into that, I want to quickly plug... our weekly newsletter.
Yeah.
The Hitching Post is what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really helpful newsletter. It ties into the topics that we talk about throughout the week. And it's just, if you're really interested in a topic that we've talked about, you can sign up for the newsletter. You'll get more information about it. And it has our last few episodes we've recorded, so you can catch up. It's just interesting. It's an interesting, cool newsletter. It's free and it's helpful and informative because we don't want to, we're not creating like a junky newsletter.
Yeah.
We put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, we're trying anyway. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so head on over to theoffgridoutpost.com. There's a sign up widget right on the main page.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So the case study I want to talk about is actually about a friend of mine. Down here in Arizona. I won't name any names.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. So basically, there is a larger town by where we're at. We're rural, but about 15 miles south, there's a larger town, maybe 60, 70,000 people. And there is a swap meet there. And at the swap meet... They're, you know, fully in compliance with the government, regulated, permitted. They have their evacuation plans, their drawings, everything's in order with the city.
Mm-hmm.
But they suck. They suck at what they do because they overcharge their booths. They're only open one day a week. And a lot of times they'll fail to open. So there's no consistency.
Yeah.
Which is really bad for business.
Especially if you're a vendor.
So, yeah. because you're relying on that to open. Oh, it's not open today. Sorry, guys.
Right.
Really? I mean, come on. That's really bad business practice.
Yeah, so right off the bat,
my buddy,
right off the bat, you're talking about poor service and higher prices.
Yeah. So it's only natural for a competitor to pop up, which is my friend.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually started a swap meet on the right-of-way on public land.
Mm-hmm.
In an unincorporated area out of city limits. And that went on for a year. He didn't charge anybody. It was just kind of a decentralized swap meet where you can set up a booth, show up. People were into it every weekend. It happened for a year. And then finally, the county shut them down. Finally, the guys with guns showed up
mm-hmm.
and said this was it. And that's when you concede. When the guys with the guns show up, as far as this kind of situation.
Sure, yeah. You got to pick your battles.
You know, because they're running off people showing up and they're running off vendors. So it's like, okay, this is done. So then my buddy ended up renting a piece of property. So now he's on private property that he's renting.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets up a swap meet. And it's going good. And people are showing up. And the vendors are showing up. And a lot of the vendors from the larger swap meet, the more established swap meet,
they're
jumping ship because, yeah, the crappy one, because they're paying less for their booth. And it's consistently open. You know, the consistency is there.
Right.
Essentially, what happened is someone reported my friend to the county, to the board, because this is also still unincorporated. There is an illegal operation going on. They're not permitted. They're not licensed to operate.
Right. Which was definitely the competitor that turned him in.
It was the competitor.
The state-sponsored mm-hmm. competitor.
So now my friend has to go through unbelievable hoops. You would not believe what they want out of people to start a swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
First off, there's a $500 permit application to run the swap meet, and you don't know if you're going to get approved. So you're putting $500 in the game.
Right. So let's talk about that. Just that little point for a second. There's only one purpose for that. It is to stop the startup. It's a barrier to
yes.
entry. That's plain and simple. That's all it's for. So we know we can stop anybody who doesn't have $500 from even starting the game. They don't even get to
right.
They don't even get dealt a hand yet because they don't have $500. That's all that is. It doesn't do anything yeah. else. So go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, that is. That is exactly what it is. Especially when you don't know if you'll even be approved. So then if he's not approved, does he have to pay another $500 or is there a reapplication fee? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that
so we have that.
That regulation is going to be supported by the established swap meet. Because they're already established. They don't have to worry
yeah.
about that.
Yeah, they're more than happy to enforce that.
Yeah, because they're established.
The little guy.
They've got the $500 now because they're already doing business. It's not a startup cost for them. So sure, yeah, they're for it.
Yeah. So then on top of that, he has to have an evacuation plan in place. And we're talking about a dirt lot.
Yeah.
on the side of a highway.
An evacuation plan for a parking lot. Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And then he has to notify every resident within 300 feet of the swap meet that they will be having a swap meet there. So I don't know how many houses, at least a dozen. Behind there, that if one of them wants to give hell about it, then there's going to have to be hearings to listen to that person complain.
Right.
And there has to be a drawing of the layout from, you know, maybe an architect or an engineer. So someone has to go in into their AutoCAD software and do this mock-up of where everything is going to be on the lot, and there has to be landscaping. So you have to have some landscaping on there. You can't just have a swap meet. It has to be a landscaped swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what that consists of, I think there's some landscaping. There's some trees out there. There's some yuccas, so maybe that'll count. I don't know how much landscaping they want.
Yeah, and this is still, this part of the process is just a justification for the existence of the permitting process. So that it looks like, because honestly, what does a bureaucrat know about a swap meet? Why should they be the ones deciding if this layout is a good layout or not? They don't know. The chances of that bureaucrat having any knowledge of a swap meet other than maybe going to one is almost nil. But this bureaucrat is the one that's got to approve this plan. It just makes no sense. But it's all just a...
It doesn't make sense. It's nonsensical. The things that they are demanding from him are nonsensical for this line of business. And this is just for a quote-unquote swap meet. Now, if he wants to upgrade to a flea market, then it's a whole other level of shit.
Oh.
And I don't know what that level is.
So they've defined...
I'm serious.
They've defined swap meet and flea market as different things. Hmm. Interesting.
Yes. So there's levels. So there's the... There's the multifamily garage sale, which can only happen maybe a few times a year, and it has to change location. And then there's the swap meet, which is a more formal meet, but that's also can't happen consistently at the same location. And then there's the flea market that can be consistently held once a week. At the same location with further regulation and permitting.
Yeah.
So basically he's stuck in this quagmire of, will he ever get it open? Will he ever be able to fight the red tape? Because I can guarantee you the people that complained about his swap meet are members of the board who's going to be making a decision on this swap meet.
Yeah, probably. Or at least have some influence in one way or another, probably.
Yeah. So it's basically destroying capitalism. It's just a gleaming example of how government destroys capitalism.
Yeah, it's a way to hold back the actual free market.
Yeah.
And it happens on the smallest scale at your local government all the way up to the largest scale, which would be your national government and soon to be your world government.
Yeah. It's sad because my friend has a much better business model, much better business practices. The vendors don't even want to be at the other swap meet anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the other swap meet is likely to win just because of the bureaucratic red tape permitting licensing system.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Right.
So they're going to fight it, and he's going to go through all the hoops. He's going for it. He's not going down without a fight. I'm concerned that he's going to be on the losing end of this battle. We'll see.
Yeah, and so anyone who might say that that is capitalism, I think just either they don't understand capitalism or I don't. I guess either is possible, but one of us doesn't know
what capitalism is. I'm not sure how capitalism.
Yeah.
Well, state-sponsored people are going to justify it up and down, left and right.
Sure.
But to have an evacuation plan on an open parking lot, I mean, really, that's just nonsensical.
Well, you're...
That's just trying to justify their existence.
Right. And it's, you know, you can't... If you're using the threat of force and violence against your competitor, it's not capitalism. That is... I'm sorry, it's just not. I mean, you can make whatever argument you want, but that's not what capitalism is supposed to be. We call it capitalism here. It's just not.
Crony capitalism, I think you're right, is the perfect way to describe it. So do you have any tips for my friend? I'm sure he'll listen to this episode. For how he can maybe outmaneuver this... stronghold.
Yeah. Tip one is, first step is stall the process at every corner. Pretend to comply. Actually, maybe even do comply with the first few steps. Play stupid. Whatever you got to do to stall the process. for as long as you can stall the process. Step two is to build personal relationships with his vendors, become more than acquaintances with his vendors, talk to the problems he's having with the state or the county, and if he can stall this process long enough, over enough time, he can build really strong relationships with these people. And when the time comes where the guys with guns show up, he might ask for their support. You know, the best that the guys with guns can do is come in and arrest him, right? But they can't arrest everyone. So it would take the compliance of all the vendors to say, oh, okay, we'll leave. But if they just say, you know, we're not leaving, they can't, they're not going to arrest everybody.
Yeah, and he take a stand.
And if he's not willing, to spend a night in jail over this, then maybe he shouldn't go down that road, because it's likely that if it gets that far, he will have to spend a night in jail. Otherwise, he's just got to comply with all their demands. And if that's the case, then he can still do that, but stall the process for as long as he can in order to gain capital to pay the $500 fee, pay for the draftsman who's going to draw up the plan. You know, maybe he could even talk to these vendors who like his swap meet better and don't want to go to the other ones and say, look, this is the, I've got to come up with $1,000 to make this happen. You know, are you guys willing to help me out in some way? You want to donate? Do you want to, I'll have to charge you higher fees for the first 6 months, something. But, you know, he's not going to be able to do it alone unless he just has the money to do it and wants to comply.
Right. Yeah, and I know that he's still running the swap meet to some certain degree. He's not allowed to take any payments from vendors. So a donation system would work. And I think they would donate.
Yeah.
You know, and $10 for a booth.
And there's ways around that. I mean, they can say you can't take money from any vendors, but unless they've got some guy standing next to him all day long, they're not going to know whether he's taking money.
Exactly.
You know, just.
But technically, officially, he could not charge his vendors. So he can unofficially take donations, which I'm sure they'll be happy to do.
Yeah.
And then he's not allowed to put signs up now. He had a sign designed to put out there that he can't put up. His sandwich boards, things like that on corners. Mm. He has to have a permit to put a sign up on a corner from the county to put a sandwich board up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy. They're trying to regulate him out of existence, so.
Yeah.
But those are all really good tips, yeah. It'll be interesting to see the outcome of this. But it grinds my gears, because I'm planning on being a vendor at his swap meet. Mm. And I've actually, Cody and I have already done some trade work for that. We helped him clear the lot, because it was overgrown, you know, with weeds. And we went out there and busted our asses for a half a day.
Bartered some labor for some lot fee, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we're kind of vested just a tad into seeing this thing go through. Mm-hmm. And I was planning on having a weekly booth out there. So it's in my interest to help him in whatever way I can to get this damn thing open.
Right.
Because I don't want to kowtow over to the crappy swap meet. I don't want to do that now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, maybe there could also be some, I don't know, some sort of community development. Maybe he can do something, put something in his business plan that helps the immediate locals in some way. I don't know what that would look like. But if he can get the locals on his side, that would be good.
Oh, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure what that would be, like some sort of cleanup or, I don't know, food drive or something? Is that what you mean?
Something. Maybe join the Adopt-a-Highway program or I don't even know if they have that out there, but I don't know what it would look like. Get involved with the local school, donate some money to the 4-H club or time or volunteer with the fire department. I don't know what it would look like, but if he can involve himself with
something
the,
along those lines.
Yeah, if he can involve himself with the immediate local community, it would help him.
Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, in summary, I think it trickles all the way down to the bottom from the huge corporation conglomerates that control lawmaking and favorable conditions for their massive companies to keep growing down to the small guys at the bottom. It's just not right.
Yeah. I think the main point is that all of these restrictions, regulations, they're all ultimately the threat of violence. And if you're using the threat of violence, you're not talking about capitalism.
Because once the guys with guns come out, I mean, that's force.
Mm-hmm.
And they're shutting you down. Permit or else.
Right, because the more you refuse to comply, the more the threat escalates until it is actually violence.
Yeah, it'll keep, because if you resist and resist, eventually you're done for.
Yeah.
There will be some point of resistance where it gets ugly and violent.
Right.
I think that about wraps it up for this episode. What do you think?
Yeah. I would like to know what our listeners think about that. So send us an email. We've been starting to get a few emails, which is pretty awesome. We respond to them. And the last one, which I won't mention in detail, but has even sparked a new episode idea, which was awesome. So,
yeah, I'm really kind of excited and curious about this upcoming topic.
Right. So, yeah, send us an email, leave us a comment. We'd love it.
Yep. Regina@theoffgridoutpost.com or Cyrus@theoffgridoutpost.com are our email addresses. Don't forget to stop by our website. It's pretty cool. And we appreciate all of your support.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, people buying our ebooks. You get value out of it. And we can try and keep our lights on a little bit longer.
Right.
All right. Well, until next time.
Talk to you later.
Later.
Here's a little teaser for what's coming next week.
Biochar does not absorb heavy metals and things like that. Activated charcoal will. And what that means is after you activate the charcoal, it has a negative charge. And so it actually attracts things with positive charge.
Thanks for listening to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe so you can get all the new episodes.